Happy birthday to us.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, dear Product Breakfast Club. Happy birthday to you.
Ow.
All right, Jason, I think we should do this as a cold opener. So like start it with us singing the happy birthday and right afterwards play the Product Breakfast Club music. How about that?
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
That'll be dramatic.
And including this part.
Product Breakfast Club.
Product Breakfast Club. Happy birthday, club.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome to the Product Breakfast Club.
Podcast,
the Product Breakfast Club podcast.
It's not just a place you go, it's a thing you listen to.
Yeah, I'm your host, Jake Knapp in San Francisco.
And I'm your other host, Jonathan Courtney. And Jake, why do I have a whiskey here in my hand?
Because you're Irish.
Hold on, Jesus Christ, why do I have a whiskey here in my hand? Okay, that fair enough, I walked right into that one. But to everyone listening who wondered about the cold opener, you know, us singing happy birthday, it is exactly 1 year from when the first episode of the Product Breakfast Club landed. Jake, a year ago, probably actually a little over a year ago, because we probably recorded it before it got released, we started recording episodes of the Product Breakfast Club. 1 year ago. And I also thought it would be interesting. Let me have a look back to how many people were listening to it in that first month compared to how many people are listening to it now. 1 year, Jake.
Okay.
November 2017 was when we started this podcast. It feels, yeah, I don't know. In some cases, it feels like it was 1 year. I remember sitting in the car. I was in Denmark. I was visiting the guys at Lego. And we had just released all six episodes in one go. And I remember asking them, would they listen to it? They said they would. That's the whole story. Okay, so December 2017, we had 8,438 downloads.
Across how many episodes?
That was probably, I think December had the most episodes ever. So it probably had like six or seven episodes in December. Then January, we had 16,000, so we doubled it. Then February, we had 15,000, so we went down. Then March, we had 18.
Short month, though.
Yeah. Then March, we had 18,000. So we went up again. April, we had 29,000. But that was because we did these Friday Funcasts. So actually,
it was a
bigger jump than it should have been. So May, 24,000. June, 30,000. July, 32,000. August, 31,000. And then from August, this is where I said I really, really wanted to get to 10,000 listeners per episode. Remember that?
Yeah, that's never happening.
Listen to how much a tiny bit of effort, like what happens if we do it, just a tiny little bit of effort telling people to listen to it. So August, 31,000 and July was 32,000. So almost no growth, June, July, August. September, 40,000. October, 52,000.
Oh, wow.
So we went from 8,000 in December, 8,000 downloads, to 52,000 in October. November remains to be seen. But on average, we're getting about 7,000 listens per episode, which is quite cool. Wow, yeah, I didn't even realize that.
Wait, that's actually getting closer to 10,000 than I thought.
Man, I told you. Yeah, but to be fair now with the baby coming, it's not super likely that we'll get to 10,000. But listen, everyone listening right now, and Jason, I would really appreciate if you can put some serious movie music, like a movie trailer where it's like, like something. Okay, everyone listening to the Product Breakfast Club podcast right now, I need you to come together. I need you to get on your social media platforms. I need you to share the Product Breakfast Club podcast. Tell everyone about it. We need to get to 10,000 downloads per episode. We are so close. We just need 3,000 more per episode. We just need 3,000 more subscribers. Come on, we can do it. All you need to do is review the podcast, share it on Twitter, call up your parents, tell them to download it. Tell them to call their parents. I don't care what implications that has.
Open a new account and download it on another device so it looks like you're two people or three people.
We need them to be real, Jake. We need them to be real.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Because I stand to win $20 if we don't do it.
I win $20 if we get 10,000 listeners by December 31st or whatever the end of December is. So everybody come together, help us get to 10,000 listeners. And really how you can help, number one, if you haven't given us a 5-star review yet, please do that. By the way, Jake, the people on Instagram sharing, you know what? I'm going to read some of your names out on the air right now because I ask you to do this every week, but sometimes, you know, I don't read their names out on the air. What is my problem?
What is my
actual issue here? Okay, let's have a look at how many people tagged me on Instagram today about the podcast. Okay, so Mail Chia, MaelChia at Mail Chia at Instagram. Thank you so much for sharing. And Mail Chia really, really loved the intros on this week's episode. We also have Heath Kenny, my favorite person of all time, at You and I Studio. He shared today's Product Breakfast Club as well. He said by Sprint, hashtag by Sprint. We got a couple more. And also, seriously, guys, we really, how much do we appreciate this, Jake?
We appreciate it a bazillion. One bazillion.
Exactly.
No, we really do appreciate it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I did not think we would be doing this a year after we started.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I thought we would give up, for sure. We give up on stuff all the time.
We do.
I thought we would just start it, drop it. Like, done. It was hot. But it's because people are into it. It's because people talk about it.
Yeah.
That's the only motivation. That's the only reason to keep doing it. That and it's fun. That and we're talking anyway, and we just have to record it.
At The Golden Nuggets on Instagram shared it and said, Jake and Jonathan reveal the golden truth behind design sprints. It's true. That is the golden truth. There's so many more, so many more. I really, really appreciate it. I have to say, at Information Lovers, this is Katharina Klassen, who also thought my name was Jizz Cream and kicked off Jizz Cream Gate. She's always sharing the podcast. Really, really appreciate it. Yeah, she's a really huge supporter of the Product Breakfast Club, and I'm sure she's gotten a lot.
Even now when she knows that that's not actually still.
Because she kicked off Jizzgate. Anybody listening to this podcast without context of Jizzgate, you may need to go back about two episodes. Oh, here we go. At kar.sti, thank you so much again for sharing. Oh, by the way, Jason, you can turn off the music if it was still going. But anybody wondering who Jason is our amazing producer. And
amazing.
He doesn't leave these moments where we're talking to him in the podcast by accident. We consciously decided last year that whenever we talk to the editor, we're not just going to cut it out and treat him like an animal, right? People have to know how much work he's doing in the background and how much bullshit there is in this podcast before he fixes it. So that's who Jason is. Yeah, Jake, a year. We've been running this podcast for a year. How crazy is that?
A year. In commemoration, I'm eating my breakfast right now, so you can maybe hear me chewing.
And I'm drinking whiskey. Wait, if anyone's wondering, it's Connemara whiskey. The first time I had it was in Japan, actually, and I didn't know what it was, and I was drinking it, and I was like, wow.
Oh, aren't you a big deal?
Quite a big deal. I was in another country. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to let the ice cube hit the corners, but I can't. It's going to spill if I try to
get it there. The microphone shorts out, so I spilled whiskey on it while trying to achieve a sound effect. I'm drinking coffee. Because it's the morning here.
Because you're in San Francisco. I'm in Berlin. It's very dark, and my child is still not there. We are 1 week overdue now. My wife is 1 week overdue. So it's been so weird. Just like every night we pretty much think it's going to happen. Do you know that feeling? We think it's going to happen and we can't sleep because of that.
Yeah, our boys were also overdue. That is a bizarre time that you're living
in. So weird.
Actually, it's funny to think because in the US, they don't really let you go past 2 weeks. I think 2 weeks over is kind of the max. And then they're like, all right, time to.
Yeah.
So like by the time this episode comes out, there's going to be Jonathan Jr.
Yeah.
Or Jonathan's wife, Jr.
Holy crap. Yeah, that's true.
Have you thought of any names yet? Because you should start thinking about those.
We know the name. We know the name already.
Oh, okay. It's Jake, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Jake Knapp. It's little Jake Knapp, even though we're not talking about the gender yet. It's little Jake Knapp. Yeah, it's going to be very cute, little Jake Knapp. Imagine if I called it something like really specific to the design sprint and just like got like you would actually find that weird. Imagine if I called a child Map This is the first time we've recorded this podcast, I think, like so far in advance. Like, this is Monday.
Yeah.
I have to say, Jason got a little bit angry at me last week, and rightly so, because I sent him the episode on like Thursday. He has loads of other really cool clients to work on that actually have like big podcasts. And I'm like, oh, hey, Jason, here's the episode. Like 3 days. And he was like on vacation. I'm so sorry, man, about that one, Jason. But thank you for getting it out. Thanks for putting the Scooby-Doo music in there as well. I really, really appreciate it. Jake, I do have a topic. Do you want to have a birthday topic run through quickly here?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. Oh, wait. Oh. When do we do the trailer for the other interview?
Yeah. It's going to say who it is, right?
Yeah, it's going to say who it is. We can say who it is. It's Julie Zhu.
Don't, you have to build up the tension.
Oh.
Pretend you didn't say it and say it again.
Okay. I've got...
She's really famous. She's really famous. She's really cool.
Yeah. I think one of the most popular writers on Medium, actually. I was looking at her Medium stream. Like, if you go to a person's Medium page, sort of, there's like...
Yeah.
And I was looking at her posts and like... Every post has like 10,000 claps. Like, it's just like ridiculous, like better than my best post ever. Yeah, just amazing.
All were from me.
And a lot of posts that I put in my newsletter, and they're always like the most popular post when I include them. Just great, great stuff. Really insightful about design, about building products, and also about like team dynamics, leadership stuff. Really great. You said you've wanted to interview her for a long time.
Yes. She's one of those people that I was just like somehow afraid to ask. So I just never asked her.
Same here. Same here. I was also afraid to ask her. It turns out she's really nice.
Should we say who she is?
Yeah, maybe now we should.
Yeah, say who she is.
It's Julie Zhu.
Yeah, but what's her? I think
Julie Zhu is a vice president of product design at Facebook.
Holy shit.
Yeah, which is a really big deal.
A few people use Facebook.
A few people use it. So she's kind of like worked her way up from being an intern at Facebook to being
so
VP
insane.
Of product design. Super cool story.
Holy
and
shit.
She has a book coming out in March, kind of about that journey, but it's a really like a how-to guide for managers. I think you're going to need it.
Oh,
John. You're going to need this book.
I'm going to need that shit, man.
And so that's what we're going to have her on the show and do like an actual interview. But I had just bought this thing at Jonathan's suggestion, this Zoom recorder, Zoom H5 handy recorder. And I recorded a little quick interview with Julie at a coffee shop because she and I met to talk about book marketing strategy and like book release stuff and just like that stuff.
Cool.
Which was kind of that was my in to get to talk to her.
Oh.
She was really totally cool and nice, but I shouldn't have been so intimidated. But anyway, so we recorded a little, I tried out this recorder and we did a little snippet, a little trailer, which we can play now. I was going to look
Let's just have a listen. Let's have a listen. Let's jump in.
Let's jump in.
All right, let's make a jumping in noise, though, because we don't really have music that goes between sections on the Product Breakfast Club.
Oh, that's right.
Okay.
And I think that as a new manager, you're in this situation where a lot of people look up to you and you're sort of the leader of the team. And so you feel like you have to come across as if you know everything.
Yeah, totally.
But in the inside, you actually... The whole time, the narrative in my head is like, oh my God, am I actually like the right person for this job? Like, do I even know what I'm doing? And so I think it's that emotional journey. Like, whenever I talk to new managers, it's always like the heart of what we get to. You know, it's not actually about all of the tactics. It's actually about like, how do you manage the psychology of that? And what are the ways in which you can sort of grow in your confidence as a leader? And that's a lot of, you know, what I wanted to put into this book.
All right, we're back.
All right, and we're back. I think we should try to get her on a couple times, actually. I was thinking it would be cool to interview her about...
Daily.
Daily, yeah, yeah. Like, just keep calling
the Daily Julie.
Julie, it's John. John, no, hang up. No.
Yeah, and she's like, I'm the fucking VP of product at Facebook. Biggest product in the world, bruh.
Yeah.
We're so professional. True. What does that say? Second best author?
Oh, yeah. That's, yeah, it says second bestest best author.
Who gave you that?
My son, Flynn.
You need to sort them out, Jake. It should say first best.
It actually does on the back, but I felt like it was less intimidating to have second best on the,
okay.
on the wall there.
How are your sci-fi and fantasy novels going?
Not good.
Why?
Not good. I meant to start on November 1st. I was going to do this, write a novel November month. But also I've been planning like November, December, January, February. I was just going to crank out the draft of the sci-fi book. And I have not done anything. I wrote like 900 words on it. I have like 22,000 from the spring, but
okay.
You know, we've had stuff going on. We had house guests. We had all the stuff going on, and I just have all these excuses. Mm,
house guests are the worst.
I have an experiment that I'm going to do with the podcast and with writing.
Oh,
I think it's going to be hard to record them for a few weeks here while, you know, you're going to have
for sure.
little Jake Knapp running around. It's your baby. And so my plan, I'm going to see how much people hate it, but I thought I would record every day like a little short podcast. Like my journal, like my, like, okay, guys, here's what I'm going to do today. Maybe occasionally a little random snippets of like talking to people who maybe, you know, are going to help me out. I don't know. I'm going to try it though. I'm going to try like something, little short Jake pods, like one a day.
Jake pods.
Yeah.
I love them. I love it. So that's basically how you're going to stop us getting to 10,000 downloads.
Exactly. Exactly.
You're going to fuck up the podcast.
You're going to be gone and I'm going to ruin it. I'm going to like totally destroy whatever fan base we have. They're going to be like, what
I love
is
it.
This? What is
be
going
warned,
on?
Everybody.
Be warned, everybody.
Wait, you got to deliver that to Jason on time.
Yeah. Well, it'll be every day. It's just going to be
every
a short
day.
One, a little short one every day.
Okay. But don't require a lot of editing
no,
yet, though. It's
no
more
editing.
Like
it's going to be like 5 to 10 minutes of just me being like, because also when I'm talking to you on the podcast, I can use my normal tone of voice. I forget that we're recording a podcast and there's like 7,000 people listening. But when it's just me by myself, my voice gets really quiet. I get nervous about it. I'm like, oh, hey,
hello.
Everybody. It's Jake.
Oh, hello.
Hey. This is a Jake pod. I'm going to talk about my writing project. It's going to be really awkward.
Children.
It's going to be so, so awkward and so different from the normal show. People are going to hate it. And we'll lose all our subscribers back to zero. The $20 is safely mine.
Jake, you know what? Fuck him.
Yeah.
We don't have any sponsors on here.
That's right.
People are listening for... Okay, we did do the t-shirt. Nobody bought the t-shirts. Whatever. We have absolutely no... No one can hold us to anything. We can do whatever the fuck we want with this podcast. We could just sit here in silence for a day. And if somebody complained, I would just be like, excuse me, just turn off the fucking podcast.
Yeah, just turn it off. Just turn it off.
Just turn it.
Yeah.
Please keep listening though.
Yeah, but really please keep listening. It's the only thing. It's the only thing that we care about.
All right. I'm going to go into a topic. I think I have two really good topics for you. What I wrote down here was Julie Trailer, but it looks like Julie Trawler.
Mm.
I'm going to be very confused when I come back to that for the show notes.
Maybe that should be one of our topics.
So, Julie, how would you design a trawler? And she's like, I am literally the VP of product at Facebook, and I don't like this joke. I'm like, yeah, but a trawler.
So you think you're so smart, but how would you design a trawler?
And then it doesn't matter what she says because we don't know how to design a trawler.
Yeah.
So we're like, yeah, that's cool. Okay, here's the first topic. As you know, and as the audience knows, for the past 3 episodes, I've been playing a video game called
I'm
going to
eat my peanut butter toast while you're talking. So if you hear any sticky chewing in the background, it's me.
Even before you're chewing, that noise is coming from you. Okay, back to this. Okay, so I was playing Red Dead Redemption 2 for the last few episodes. Great game. However, I have to say about maybe 17, 18 hours in, something happened and I started to enjoy it less. I just couldn't figure it out at all. So for the first 20 hours, it was the greatest thing I've ever played. I told you that a lot of it was just kind of me going around, journeying around the world that they've created, this amazing world, like camping, fishing.
Yeah, you were showering, shaving, changing your
showering,
pants.
Showering, shaving, all of this stuff. No, I never changed my pants. Never. Never. So yeah. So I was wondering, like, what's after happening? Like, what has happened? What's after,
what's
happening?
After happening?
You notice that I'm noticing now when I'm saying the Irish after thing. When I go back to Ireland, everyone's going to be weird, freaked out by me pointing that out every time.
What did you say, John? Have you said what has happened? What does it mean?
What? What did you after say, Jonathan? Irish people listening to this podcast, please tell me if you say the after thing. So, for example, what's after happening instead of what has happened. Okay, so I was playing the game yesterday again. I was like, why? Why am I enjoying it less? I can't understand. I really want to enjoy this. I'm right now probably like 35 hours in. And so I decided to Google it. I decided to Google like...
Why do I not like it? You look that up.
I think it was like, why no hunting 20 hours? Red Dead Redemption 2. Something like that. Like, because I was like, why don't I want to hunt anymore? So I found an article on Forbes, believe it
Forbes.
Or not.
Huh.
Yeah, Forbes. And a guy had an article on there saying, the economy of Red Dead Redemption breaks after 15 hours. And I was like, oh, okay. I read the article. And basically, and by the way, I'm getting to a life point that's not just about video games. So so I read this article.
We're all riveted. I speak for the entire audience. Yeah, we cannot
exactly.
Wait.
Oh, fuck. Ammer is going to be looking for this article. Ammer, if you search economy Red Dead Redemption 2 Forbes, you'll find it. Okay, so reading, and Ammer, by the way, is the guy who does the show notes. So reading the article, it said 15 hours into Red Dead Redemption 2, there's a mission where you rob a bank. And after you rob this bank, you get about $2,500. Up until that point, every single thing you've done only got you like 50 cent, $1, $2. You had maybe maximum $10 on you at all times. And so you really had to ration your money and make sure that you're spending it on the right things. And therefore, you also had to hunt for food for your like caravan of people. You have like 20 people you have to take care of. That was sort of the thing that got me doing all of these side missions and, you know, roaming the world on my horse and doing all of this crazy cool stuff. And as soon as I did this mission, it just stopped for me. I was like, oh, okay, I have literally, I can't buy anything else in the game that's worth this much money. So that like whole money part of the game just stopped working and I stopped hunting. I stopped doing the side missions. The main missions got a lot more boring because it almost seems like this is a glitch or something because the next mission was, hey, we're going to rob a train. And I got like $120 from robbing the train. And I was just like, it doesn't really make sense to me at all anymore now. And so that made me realize that in Red Dead Redemption 2, as soon as you don't have any restrictions on your resources, the game gets a little bit more boring. And then it's like almost just like going through the story and ticking the boxes. And even though you can see there's all these other things on the maps that you can do, for example, like you can go up into the snowy mountains and hunt for bears and all of this stuff. I'm just like, nah, I don't really feel about it. Okay, so that happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Then, you're going to like where this is going, I think.
I already do. I don't know where it's going, but I like it. Good. I like wherever it might go.
Okay, so then for the first time in like a year, no, first time since April, I went back to the gym. And I was listening to an episode of Joe Rogan, a recent one, with a guy called Darren Brown, who's like a mentalist. He's a magician, whatever you want to call him, a hypnotist. And they were talking about sort of like purpose. They were talking about like in life, like purpose. How do you find your purpose? All of that kind of shit. And I've always had a problem with people talking about, you know, finding your purpose because I kind of think that it's very difficult to figure out what your actual purpose is for a very long time. So that's not the thing that really jumped out to me and really struck me. But what stuck out to me was they started getting down to the topic of happiness, the topic of purpose, et cetera, et cetera. And they really, really talked for a long time about happiness. And Joe Rogan, he's this like crazy looking, angry MMA fighter, wrestler dude. He's like a total bro. It's hilarious. You should definitely check him out if you don't know what Joe Rogan looks like.
I'm doing that right now.
So he started talking about like, you know, when you start accumulating enough wealth, like the thing that a lot of people do is they start to seek comfort in life. So, you know, you start buying things that make life easier. If you are successful in your job, you start to try to make that as easy as possible for yourself as well. For example, for me with AJ and Smart, after about 5 years, I was like, oh, cool, this is a lifestyle business. I don't have to work that much anymore. I'm just going to chill and stay at home and play video games and just not work a lot. But he said something that really stuck with me. He said, seeking comfort is one of the worst things a person can do in terms of achieving overall happiness. A lot of happiness comes from working towards things, the unknown, and being genuinely nervous about what might happen the whole way. This is sort of like shortening the quote a little bit, but it made me think a lot about the Red Dead Redemption 2 scenario. Once I had enough money in Red Dead Redemption 2, I kind of lost the will to play the game and the excitement of it because it really took away all of the unknowns for me. And I think in life, that was my chair, by the way, making that noise. I think in life,
I love how you just got really serious.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was my fucking chair, okay?
In life. For the record, you really were adjusting your chair when it happened. I saw it on the screen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
oh my god. That was amazing.
That was good. That was good. So what I'm trying to get to is that I think in life it is at least being sort of my normal thing to sort of seek comfort and aim for life that's as easy as possible. But whenever I reach that point, I become way less happy about what I'm doing and way more lethargic and way more bored. So I realized that for me personally, I always need to have a challenge that's slightly out of reach for me to actually be excited. Jesus, I got to that in a very long...
That was good. Man, that was really good. So, it even had like a comic relief moment. It was really good. Yeah.
I realized in life...
But I was listening to that and I was thinking, yeah, man, that's like kind of this whole thing, going back to the thing about trying to write the sci-fi book. I mean, honestly, I don't know if I can do that. I'm not sure if anyone will care. I mean, part of the reason for wanting to do the little podcast experiment with it is to see if I can generate a way to get people interested in it, build like an audience for it. I have like not very many advantages going into this situation. If I think back to like writing the Sprint book, there was like a bunch of advantages. Like Google at the time, like I knew that this thing worked. I knew I had stories about it that other people didn't have. Like there were stories we could tell about businesses using it that weren't the same stories that you read in every business book about, you know, the same companies. There were all these advantages. There were people already interested in it from blog posts. I go into this new thing and it really might fail. And honestly, like John Saratsky and I went, co-author on Make Time, we're talking about Make Time last night and like how we have to figure out how to build an audience for that idea really over time in a different way than we did with Sprint. Like if that book is going to ever reach people, like we have to like find a way to get people interested in it really by probably like blogging and like doing stuff over a long period of time. And I started thinking, I really need to do that with the new sci-fi book, but also it's just like the whole kind of excitement about going into something that is super hard, where like I don't know how to write it and I don't know how to make it any kind of a success, is also really fun. Like it's the thing that is motivating about it and interesting and makes me like want to go at that challenge because it's hard and unknown. There's definitely something to that little Joe Rogan nugget of knowledge, and the Red Dead Redemption is like a nice little like encapsulated simulation. You can see what happens when that money just appears.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, okay, who cares now?
Yeah, and I think for me, I'm going through a time at AJ and Smart right now, which I can't really talk about publicly yet, but I would say taking a relatively large financial gamble to get something that I want within AJ and Smart at the moment. And I'm in no way worried about it at all. And I'm confused about why I don't care about it. I'm confused about the fact that, basically, just to give some context, I am putting my own personal money on the line to get some more shares in the company. So myself and my co-founder are 50-50 co-founders now, and we're right now in the process. By the time this episode comes out, actually, we'll be deep into the process of slightly changing that ownership, the way that it's leaning. And of course, the only way you can do that if you're running a company is that you have to buy those shares off the other person. And for me, it's obviously more money than I've accumulated myself. So I need to like do all this kind of bank loan stuff. It's basically like buying an apartment or a house or whatever. And I couldn't figure out like, why don't I care about this? Why is this something that is so easy for me to do? And I think the reason is because doing that adds more challenge to my life. It's really weird, but like it puts me at a more of a disadvantage than I was before. And that somehow excites me. I don't really understand what that like point is. But for me, you know, risking things, kind of gambling a little bit, like playing with how things are going to work out. Coming to San Francisco the first time, I have to say, while I was on the plane, actually the first three times I came over there to work with those clients, even to meet you the first time, I was just shitting myself. I was like, why am I doing this? Like, why would this tiny Berlin agency owner, I'm not tiny, actually, I'm quite tall. But why would I go to San Francisco, Silicon Valley, where like the best design shit in the world is happening, and even have the audacity to come over and just be like, hey, we're also relevant. But the reason is...
I love the idea that you're actually really tiny. Like you were on the airplane and you were just like you're
one foot tall.
You're in like the overhead bin or like you're like a matchbox. And like,
I have the audacity.
I will go to the Bay Area.
a tiny fucking Irish leprechaun coming over to San Francisco.
A literal leprechaun.
But I think like these moments, even though they kind of make me feel a bit sick to the stomach about like what might happen, there needs to be a few of those per year for me, or I start to get really bored. Like, it's crazy. So what happened is, after I realized this Red Dead Redemption thing, after I heard the Joe Rogan episode, I came into work on Monday last week. That was the baby due date, so I wasn't even supposed to be coming in, but it didn't arrive. And I went to Laura, who's running the masterclass team, the online course team, and I was like, Laura, like, let's triple our expectations for next year. Let's just go way crazier than we were expecting. And let's just have some fun with it. Like, who cares if we even get half of that? At least we'll go for it. Let's just see what happens if we grow the team a little bit bigger than we were planning. Let's just give that shit a little bit of a try. And yeah, immediately I was way more excited about the about 2019 than I was beforehand. And now I'm super, super excited about it. So yeah. How do you keep yourself like doing things like the book, like the sci-fi book, like the fantasy book? I guess they're just so far outside of your realm. I mean, you don't need to do those things, but I guess it's kind of a ridiculous challenge. When, like, if you get that done, you're just going to be like, holy shit, I can't believe I even did that. I don't deserve to do that sort of a thing, but I'm doing it.
Yeah, it's like, it's uncomfortable to talk about, but like, sometimes this stuff fails or feels like a failure. I feel like the fantasy book, like, I'm just starting to get like rejection letters from, this is the fantasy book that I wrote like over the course of a bunch of years. It's the first thing I wrote.
It's finished already.
The book's already finished. Yeah. Yeah. This one's already finished. It's basically, there's these two categories of book, like young adult novel, which a lot of people are familiar with young adult. That's like Hunger Games. And like, there's a bunch of books like that. And, you know, written maybe more for like middle school, like, but like high schoolers and adults like those books as well. And then there's a category book called middle grade, which is like younger than young adult. It's not as intense. It's not
like Harry Potter or something,
like early Harry Potter. Yeah, like early Harry Potter, but
baby Harry Potter. Okay,
not like the later ones where people are like dying all over the place. So
beheadings.
Yeah. So the book that I wrote is like, it's basically a middle grade plot. Like, the plot is like, and the stuff that happens is like not too intense. The story is not so long. It's like 70,000 words, which is not like, you know, it's like on the shorter end for a novel. But the voice, the way that I wrote the voice, is more like a young adult voice. So it's kind of like in between, and it'll be, I think practically it's going to be impossible to get a regular like publisher to publish it. I might be wrong, but it seems like that's the case. So like, I started to get that news from my agent. She started to hear back from folks. And in a way, like, that feels like a failure, you know, like, it's like, I've spent years working on that thing. I mean, not like that was the only thing I was doing, but I have worked on it for a period of 7 years before I felt like, yes, it's good enough. I want to try to publish it. It's funny because I think in life for me, a lot of times the thing that is like the finish line, you know, finishing the book and it comes out, finishing the software, it launches, like whatever, like the thing that I picture while I'm working on the thing as the finish line turns out to be not at all what I expected in terms of the way it felt. The first time I remember this really strongly was when I was working on Encarta, the Encarta Encyclopedia, and we would come out with an edition of it. It would be in the box. Like, the thing is out there in the world, like this finished product that's literally like a tangible thing. And I remember feeling the sense of like a letdown. Like, it was not as amazing of a feeling as I thought it would be when it came out. The high moments were really different moments in working on it, or like different moments that happen after it's out when I might be teaching a workshop, or like we're talking about it. Like, there's all these things that happen that are continue to be fun about it, but it's not, I don't know, somehow it's like that moment that seems like it's going to be the great moment is not necessarily the great moment. So hearing that this book like got rejected was actually not such a horrible moment. It was kind of just like, yeah, but like the writing of it was really fun, and actually I'm still really intrigued in like, what can I do with that book? How can I publish it in a different way? How can I like share it online or illustrate it myself or do something that's like more fun? And it started to like reignite in my head this whole like the challenge of like, how do I try to figure out this new thing? And yeah, I don't know, like that's the exciting part. It's like when I can kind of find a trailhead into like a mysterious woods where there's going to be, I don't know what's going to happen, but there's a chance of failure. That is much more interesting. So
yeah. So you don't see it as like a turnoff that it could all fuck up and fail. You're kind of like a bit excited and intrigued about what might happen.
You can also, I think, only feel good about making progress on something or figuring something out if it is really hard.
Right.
If it's not that hard, it's just not, that fun. I mean, it's the Red Dead Redemption yeah. thing. When you have $2,500 yeah. already, like, who cares? Like,
boring.
Yeah, boring. So
it's really ruined the game for me. And I realized, like, it was 2 years ago that myself and Kyle is our head of finance at AJ and Smart. It was so chilled and easy at AJ and Smart that because we weren't growing, because I wasn't taking any risks, I was just playing Metal Gear Solid 5 for an entire month. But I also didn't feel good. I was like, where's life going? Like, what's the point of all of this? And I even think now with the baby, like up until now, I've been like, you know, I think all of my 20s, and I think anyone who's in their 20s listening to this, just go with it, see how you feel, because this will slowly change. All of my 20s was about having nothing tying me down, keeping it easy. That's also why I didn't grow the company until in my late 20s, because I just wasn't willing. And I was like, yeah, I'm a rebel. Now I'm like, I want more challenges. I want more meaning, I guess, in life, because I don't care about money. I don't care about, I know I can get to like a baseline where I would be, I could survive, you know, I could live in Berlin, and it's much easier to live in Berlin, I guess, than in the US, because you don't have to have a lot of money. You can just pretty much do anything and you'll be fine. So I think for me, the easiness is definitely in no way satisfying. Actually, it's so fucking weird, but the idea of me having a kid and having to run the company, it excites me a lot because it sounds like it will be harder. It's like a bit masochistic or something.
No.
But I don't know. I like the idea of it.
Yeah, there's something to that. I mean, supposedly at some point, the original topic of this podcast was going to be design sprints, and it almost never is. But that was part of the appeal too for me with trying to create that was like, what could we do in a week? Like, could we do more? Like, yeah. Could we accomplish more? Could we bring in more people to solve a bigger problem? Could it be more than just a UI or whatever? Like, it is exciting to take on something that has the possibility yeah. of failure. When you do that stuff, you do have to sometimes fail. And I have to say that as much totally. As people talk about like failure is great, failure is the worst. It feels so bad. And like it can take me a long time to recover from something that feels like a failure. Well, I've talked about this before, so I won't dwell on it. But like feeling like the Maketime launch was not as big of a success as I hoped it was. Mm. Or even when Sprint came out, I felt like it was not as big of a success as I'd hoped it was. And as time has gone on, I realized like my interpretation of that wasn't exactly right. But
yeah.
those things are like, they take out for me a long time to recover, like weeks, you know, months. Like I'm like, oh, God, it brings out the worst parts of my personality. I obsess over like negative feedback on stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's not glorious. It's not like, yeah, great. Celebrate that failure. Like people talk about that. I just don't know how you do that. Like it sucks.
Also, I don't know how to power of moment style. It's hard to notice when the failure happened. Usually it's a slow
yeah,
kind of
yeah.
like a few weeks ago, we discussed how AJ and Smart lost a lot of money in 2018. I found out 2 days ago exactly how much we lost, by the way, and it was more than 300,000 euro. Wow. So the mistake that I made, the two mistakes that I made in late 2017 relating to how I was running the training part of the company, it's not just that we spent 300,000 euro on getting that working, it's that we actually lost 300,000 more than we thought it was all going to cost and didn't make any money on top of that. So actually, we're going to have the worst profit margin we've had in 7 years at AJ and Smart. Okay, the flip side of that is we are having a crazy excellent revenue year, almost like Amazon style, loads yeah, of revenue, yeah. no profit. But for me, I didn't really know the moment when shit hit the fan right there. It was like a 3 month heavy, dark, it wasn't like horrible, but it was like, fuck, that didn't work. Oh, shit. Just because it didn't work doesn't mean now it's easily solvable.
Yeah.
Now I need to figure out how to save the company. And this was like months and months and months of trying to solve it all. But at the same time, it was also fun to solve it. You know what I mean?
Once you can recover, like I feel like there's this turning point sometimes. I had a little bit of one with Maketime yesterday talking to John, my co-author on the phone. I had this turning point where like, and yeah, I always have this when I talk to him about stuff that we're working on together, where he's like, look, dude, let me just put it to you a different way. He like will recontextualize things for me in a good way. And I was like, yeah, okay, I can see it as a challenge now and not, and I kind of step away from the emotion of the failure. And when I see it as a challenge,
right.
not just an emotion and like a reflection on me as like a loser, then it becomes this quest. It becomes a mission. Like, okay, now this is a super tough mission. How do we make this thing happen? That's fun and exciting, but the failure stuff doesn't feel good, sucks. And I think, though, that it has to be painful for in order to really, like, teach. Like, we don't really, like, learn unless it kind of hurts. So
it's so true. It brings me to my book of the year 2018, which is going to be, I've decided the name of this episode because it's the most clickbaity name and everyone will listen to this episode if I call it Best Book 2018 or something like that. So everything we've just been talking about is in the book The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday. It didn't come out this year, but it's my favorite book of 2018. The key message of the book is that when something goes wrong, if you can recognize that something has gone wrong, if you can look at that failure and turn it into a challenge, you're more likely to have a successful and happy life. Because when shit hit the fan at AJ and Smart, when I realized that I'd made these huge mistakes and all of this was falling apart, that's when I made the online course. And the online course has been a lot more successful than any of the offline things we've ever done. So the obstacle, the thing that goes horribly wrong, can actually turn out to be a really good thing if you can look at it in that way. Unfortunately, many people see failures as, you know, a sign that they're just shit and going in the wrong direction in general. But I think that sometimes it's a good hint in which direction to go in. Like in the design sprint, when the first week goes really shit, at least you didn't spend 2 years building that thing, right? So I think for me, The Obstacle is the Way is the perfect book to read if you want to help yourself get into the mindset of seeing shitty things happening in a, not just like, oh, shit things happen and I'm just going to say it's positive, but actually seeing opportunity in shitty things happening for real and being able to execute on that opportunity. So I'm not a positive thinking advocate. Like, I don't think you should just say, oh, no, everything's fine if everything's shit. The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday says, yes, this is shit, and now how am I going to deal with it? And it's a fucking fantastic book that goes into some crazy scenarios of bad things that have happened and how people have turned them around. That's the best book I've read in 2018. Obviously, besides Make Time.
Well, yeah, I was about to say, the best book I read in 2018 is My Podcast Co-host is a Dick. By Jake Knapp, because I literally had a book come out this year, and you were
supposed to say that the best book you read was Make Time.
Well, yeah, I was going to say that in the beginning of when you were saying it, and then you just kept piling on the praise. You kept piling on the praise for Ryan Holiday, who everybody loves. Ryan Holiday, what kind of a insight is it to say that you like Ryan Holiday?
He has a big face.
The people who are listening to the podcast, they stop listening. They're like, another person talking about Ryan Holiday. I don't even care. Meanwhile, you have a poor delicate flower over here, your co-host, who wrote a book, who's like, I hope Jonathan will give me some props. No props, only to Ryan Holiday. Oh,
best book.
Dagger.
I cannot say the best book of the year is Make Time, man. That would just be so
brutal.
True.
Brutal. I have a story that I wanted to tell.
All right.
It's about your experience in Red Dead Redemption with getting the money.
Okay, but you'll come back to the best book 2018.
Maybe. It's about a book. But I've only read 2 pages of this book.
Done. Best book.
I was at the bookstore yesterday at a physical bookstore. It's a really cool bookstore. If you're in San Francisco, there's a bookstore called Blackbird Bookstore out in the Outer Sunset. And it is really cool. Very small bookstore. They're very curated. They don't have that many books. They don't have any of my books. So I'm a little miffed
assholes
at that. But why would you have my business books in a little hipstery bookstore? But anyway, but the books they have are really good. They had this book, which actually I think is really popular now and you can get everywhere, called Beastie Boys book. It's about the Beastie Boys. And I like the Beastie Boys. I really wanted to, but I didn't get it yet. But I picked it up. I looked at it at the bookstore. I like opened it up. And in the middle of the book, I was just like, I'm just going to read a random page in this book. It was a little essay by one of the guys. I can't remember which of the Beasties it was by, but it was a recollection of something that happened to them in the early 1980s. So he's like, I was at my friend's house or watching TV. And this is like before they're big at all. Like they were at that time like a punk rock band. So he's like sitting at his friend's house and they're just like watching TV. And this British Airways ad comes on and he's just like not even really paying attention. But then he's like, wait a second, what's that music in the background of the ad? He's like, that's our song. That's like a song that one of our songs is in the background. And he's like, that's so cool. And then he was like, wait a second, they can't just use our song. Like they got to pay us for that. Anyway, he like calls some friend or somehow they like find a lawyer and the lawyer like gets in touch with British Airways and they're like, oh yeah, we screwed up. Look here, we'll just give you $10,000. It's just to like settle it. We're not doing any mess with it, right? So they give the Beastie Boys $10,000. He's like, at this point in time, like, I was the only one in the whole band who had a job, and my job was at an ice cream shop. So we had, like, no money at all. And he was like, I really wanted to get, like, a guitar, like a decent guitar. So I had been going to this music shop, and there was this used model of a guitar that, like, some hero of his had. And he's like, I was $250. I wanted to, like, go get the guitar. So he gets $250 in cash out of the settlement money and goes to the music store. And he's like, all right, like, I'm going to get the guitar. And then right as he walks in, he sees this Roland like 808 machine, which is what, and they had been listening. He said, we'd just been listening to like a bunch of hip hop and they were all done with like drum machines. Oh, and it cost exactly $250. And he was like, you know what? It's just like meant to be. I'm going to buy this machine instead. And so he bought the 808. And then that was like the machine they recorded like all of their early hits on. And like, and I was like, what an amazing story. And that was just like the story that I cracked it open to, like that he happened to be watching TV when that British Airways ad happened to come on and that they got the money and then he, like all that stuff, all those coincidences, but.
Love that story.
I just thought it was cool. It was a really cool story. So, yeah.
And it could have gone the other way. It could have been that he was super angry about seeing that ad and just like sued them and just like built up a lot of resentment. But instead, he looked at it as an opportunity. RyanHoliday.com. RyanHoliday.com. So wait, Jake, we have to get... We'll probably do an episode in December like we did last year, which was called The Best of Everything 2017.
Oh, yeah.
Where we talk about the best books, the best video games, the best movies.
Yeah.
But like just off the top of your head, what was sort of a memorable book that you read this year? Power of Moments was this year too, wasn't it?
Maybe.
Or was that last year?
I can't remember. That was a good one.
The first half of that book was amazing.
I just got a book that I'm
not talking about the second
I'm really excited about reading, but I haven't read yet, called This Is Marketing, but I haven't even opened it yet. So
I got that too, Seth Godin.
Yeah, that looked like it was going to be interesting. I read part of it in Look Inside on Amazon, you know, and I was like, blink, 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 page, and I was like, oh, this might be cool. I need to know how to market things better.
I think you should ask me because I know how to do it.
Maybe if you could make like an online course or something so I didn't have to actually talk to you in person, that would be great.
Exactly.
Because I know if I talk to you in person, you're just going to keep needling me with Ryan Holiday. You're going to be like, hey, Jake, how's your writing project going? You know, Ryan Holiday is a very successful writer. You know about him? Have you?
That's how you should market things. You should be Ryan Holiday. He has such a huge face. Okay, so I got to say one thing about Seth Godin. I automatically buy every Seth Godin book because he's been such a huge influence on my life. But he's a little bit like Jason Fried in the way that he's a famous guy. He has very strong opinions. This is a fact. I'm not like just being contrary. If I took his marketing advice to sell the AJ and Smart Jake Knapp Masterclass, we would make less than 10th or a fifth of the money we're making right now.
Interesting.
Because he's not that interested. I mean, he's only just started doing Facebook ads himself. It's kind of funny because I would listen to all the podcasts he came on the last few weeks and he kind of talks down all of this kind of sleazy Facebook retarget marketing. Yeah. His team is doing that like crazy at the moment, but they've just started in the last month. And since then, I'm sure they've had a lot more success than the approach he was taking, which is also kind of old school. I mean, the principles that Seth Godin talks about, like, he's just a genius. He's like a Buddha of a human. Like, if you ever hear him speaking, it's like, whoa, that just nugget of, like, he seems too smart for reality, but he's also so focused on his own sort of way of doing things that he ignores, like, that this other stuff actually works really well. Like, it doesn't matter if he doesn't like Instagram ads, they work really, really well. It doesn't matter if he doesn't like, you know, having a Facebook account, it still works extremely well. So read that book with a pinch of salt.
A pinch of Seth salt.
Exactly.
Maybe we can get him on the show to argue with you about marketing. That would be pretty cool.
He would destroy me. That's the problem. I heard him on Gary Vee and on Tim Ferriss. And in both cases, you know, actually, there's a video on YouTube where he threatens to leave Gary Vee's show because Gary Vee is interrupting him so much.
Oh, wow.
Not in a jokey way either.
Oh, that's pretty cool. What did Gary Vee do?
He hugged him and like laughed and said, I love you. And then it was all diffused. It was a few times, if you keep interrupting me, I'm going to leave. He said that a few times. So it was fairly tense. But yeah, you got to know if you're going on Gary Vee's show that you're going to get interrupted every 12 seconds. So what's your book of the year? It's the Beastie Boys.
Book of the year.
Just off the top of your
head.
Red
Rising.
What is that?
It's a trilogy of sci-fi books.
Oh.
They're just ridiculous, over the top. It's Hunger Games meets Game of Thrones in space.
Oh, I got to write this down.
It's like young adult novel. It's got everything I love. The guy who wrote it's from Seattle. I'm from that area, sort of.
Oh, wow. It must
everything
be good.
About it is great. It's a bit violent. It could be a bit over the top.
Oh.
But it's just crazy space battles. People getting their legs cut off and then like put back on because it's the future and just crazy stuff. Crazy stuff.
Okay.
So if I think back on the books I read, and I didn't read that many, but when I got my own business time management book out there coming out, I can't really read other people's. It's hard for me to, I just got to like have some space from that stuff. So
okay,
this was like a book that really, it's three books. So I was reading it for a while. I got way into it. And yeah, that's probably the standout for me.
So because it's not really fair that you chose a fiction book, I also now have to choose a fiction book as well.
Okay, okay.
But first I need to sneeze. Oh, please
bless
leave
you.
That in, Jason.
Bless you.
Okay, so here we go on my Kindle. I read a lot of books this year, Jake.
Are they all Ryan Holiday books? How about if there are any that are not by Ryan Holiday? That'd be interesting.
90%, 90%.
90% Ryan Holiday, 10% Jocko Willink.
I'm over Jocko at the moment. Okay.
Hopefully he's not listening.
He's being definitely not listening. Exactly. He's just going to be like, I'm going to kill you now. So I'm mostly a sci-fi guy.
Yeah.
The fifth season. Do you know the fifth season? It's the Stone Sky trilogy.
You told me about it. No, I don't know it. I mean, you told me about it. I downloaded the sample on my Kindle. I should take another look at that one because I didn't quite spark the fire.
It's good. It's not great.
Come on, you're for your best book of the whole year, good but not great.
Okay, I'll choose, but I gotta say one thing moment, Jake.
Okay.
Just to make you feel confident about your new book.
Okay.
Because of the whole self-publishing scene,
yeah,
like sci-fi books, and myself and Kyle talk about this every week because we're both like, I've probably read maybe 30 sci-fi books. No, way more. Fuck. I've read like 40 sci-fi books this year.
This year?
Yeah, this year. I read every single night, so I'm reading like 2 to 3 sci-fi sci-fi.
If I could just sell my books just to you, that I could make like a decent amount of money.
Yeah, so here's the thing, right? I read pretty much every new popular sci-fi. I read all the self-published stuff that kind of gets noticed. And I'll just tell you straight out, most of it is really badly written. And
just like mine. Those are like my books too.
No, but like, I really hate to say this. So I'm just finished a book and I've decided to go all in on the trilogy.
Okay.
Called All Systems Red by Martha Wells. It's called The Murder Bot Diaries. Super, super popular at the moment.
Hmm.
I think it's a trilogy or else there's maybe like 4 or 5 books. And I liked it. Like I enjoyed it, but in the way that I enjoy a Netflix show, it's not very good. It's not amazingly written. But it's like, I want to see what's happening. You know, it's just like, it's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. I also finished a book by Peter Watts. He's one of my favorite sci-fi writers at the moment because he writes hard sci-fi. It like bends your brain. It like blows your mind. But at the same time, so he's like very scientific about how he writes, but he can't write very well. So the books,
they
do relatively well in the niche of Jonathan, of like people who like to read that side of, kind of book.
The Jonathan niche.
Exactly. But it's not easy to read. It's not because it's not well written. It's not because it's too smart. It's just not very well written. But I think I have to say the standout book this year for me, which was also not well written, is a book called The Gone World by Tom Sveterlish.
Oh, that's a good name.
And this is an insane, insane time travel story that just like goes as far as you could possibly ever imagine into like the horror science of time travel. And it's got like so many different timelines, so much crazy time paradoxes going on. So that's my first favorite book of the year. And runner up, 1984 by George Orwell.
Oh, a classic. A classic.
I didn't want to read it because I was like, oh, this is going to be so old and like not relevant. I genuinely think it's one of the best written books I've ever read in my life. It is so fucking claustrophobic to read it. It's so intense, so dark. It has like, my heart was always racing when I read it because it was just so intense to read. 1984 by George Orwell is terrifying. I thought it was going to be crap.
I was thinking, and I'm not joking, that I should title my book, my science fiction book, 1985. Not have it be anything really to do with 1984 at all, but just because I think you could catch a little bit of a tailwind of people being like, whoa, there's a sequel after all these. And because I have not read 1984, but people say it really stands up. It's really good.
Okay, so this book was written in, I'm going to get this wrong, but I think it was written in like the 1920s or 19...
Definitely way before 1984.
Yeah, way before 1984. Jake, this book is... I actually don't think this was written by a human. It's too good. It's too well written, too relevant, and just too perfectly paced for this to be... Like, I read a book recently where I was just like... It was another one of these classics. I can't remember what it was, but I was like... Oh, yeah, Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, but for me, that's more like what I expected. That's really? More what I expected. Interesting. Yeah, it was more kind of like the writing style was a bit like, oh, okay, yeah, I get what he's trying to do there. But somehow it's not like clicking with me in a way that I assume it would have clicked with people when they read it back then. Whereas this George Orwell book is, 1984 is just like a perfect book.
Wow.
In my opinion.
Wow.
It's just perfection. You know what else is perfect? Sorry, last one. Also, this year in terms of like perfect book, The Road by Cormac McCarthy.
Oh, yeah. That's intense.
Oh, my God.
That is intense. Did you read that this year?
Yeah, I just read it this year. Man, I'm way behind. Like, I have so many books to catch up on.
So that's a brutal one. I don't think I've ever read a book so fast as that book because it was so good, but it was so horrible. Like, I didn't want to be in that world for any longer than necessary. I just wanted to get done with it. You know, like some books you're like, I kind of want to like drag it out because I'm like a Harry Potter. Like, I want to be in that magical world as long as possible. Take me to Hogwarts. No, I don't want it to be spring already in Hogwarts. Already the leaves are turning. No, another year is going to slip by. But
Huggy.
The Road, I was like, get me out of here. This is horrible. Yeah. But it was so good. So good.
Just one point, just in case people missed it, there are these amazing standout books and they're great. They're like, for example, like an amazing movie that wins an Oscar. But then pretty much everything else that's getting popular at the moment is quite badly written because of this whole self-publishing thing. The Stone Sky trilogy or Fifth Season trilogy, I'm actually not sure what the trilogy is called. I really liked it. It's by N.K. Jemisin. It won like the Hugo Award. It won like every single award you can possibly imagine. I'm one of these people who buys all of the Hugo Award books every year. Like for Christmas, I just kind of buy the Hugo Award books and I read them. And the Nebula Prize Award as well, because they used to be like going to amazing authors like Ursula Le Guin and stuff like that. And now it's just like reading a child's writing. It's actually like reading fan fiction. A lot of these books that I mentioned, like, so the Murderbot Diaries, for me, I like it and I'm paying for it and I'm reading the next book and I will read all of them. It's fan fiction for me. In terms of writing, there's nothing going on there. Have you read the Hugo Howey's Wool series?
Oh, no, but I've seen that around, but I haven't read it. Yeah,
it's really good. It's so addictive to read. It's so fun, but it's written by a 3-year-old. No, like seriously, all of these like new books, these new science fiction books, they're, I guess I'm actually, in case people are wondering, I actually think this is a positive thing. I think it's a positive thing that bad writers can also get their cool ideas out there.
Yeah,
and they get made into movies.
And you know what? I mean, there's so many things that are really helpful about the publishing industry in terms of like narrowing things down. And yeah, I told you about how cool it was to be in that bookstore yesterday where somebody had selected, we think these are all good books. It's cool. And in a way, the publishing industry has been doing that for a long time. And now people can self-publish. Some of the best books that I've read or the things that are the most influential to me are books that either were originally self-published or were on the cusp.
Right. Okay.
Like, for example, there's a story in the Sprint book about Harry Potter. Harry Potter was almost not published. It was like the last publisher to look at it, almost didn't even read it. And like, the editor's daughter read it and like started hounding him for the rest of the book, like the first 50 pages and started hounding him for the rest of the book. And that's what led to Harry Potter being printed. Like they printed like, I think like 500 copies at first. Like it was just like—
So crazy.
So crazy, right? Because now you look and you think, oh my God, like how can anyone not know that was just going to be the biggest thing? But it was not obvious.
Who's the author of Harry Potter again?
You're joking.
No, I've never read a Harry Potter book.
J.K. Rowling.
J.K. Rowling, of course, yeah, she's super famous.
She was a single mom, like who knows if she would have continued writing and pushing it up? Who knows? Like, who knows? But that was like, I recently found out, and it's kind of, I was talking to my agent about a book that she knew about. I won't say it, but it's like, it was a book that to me is like really influential that just barely got published. Like only one publisher actually agreed to publish it out of all the people that saw it. And I'm shocked. It was like a huge like bestseller. Like publishers don't always get it right. And actually someone who we really admire.
Yeah.
And this isn't a case necessarily of them not being able to get published, but Jason Fried, DHH, their first book was self-published, Getting Real, and that like really caught on as a self-published book, and eventually became like a revised version of that, became Rework.
Yeah.
And that's different. Like I think maybe their whole strategy all along might have been to self-publish. Hooked by Nir Eyal, that started off as a self-published book, probably again with him just because he wanted to do it that way, not necessarily because he couldn't get it published. But The Martian, that's a self-published, the thing published online that became a big
deal.
The
Martian. The Martian is the type of book I'm talking about. So Gone Girl as well, like, have you read Gone Girl, by the way?
No, I haven't. No.
Holy crap, it's so good.
Ah, okay.
Jake, you need to read Gone Girl, but it's exactly what I'm talking about. It's badly written,
yeah,
but it's actually amazing. It's so fun. It is such a fun book.
I know what you're talking about. I've read some books like that. Actually, Red Rising could be in that category. I mean, it's both great writing, and also sometimes you're like, oh, wow, I can't believe. But yeah. Yeah.
It's like James walked into the shop and said hello to the shopkeeper. He also said hello back. And then the shopkeeper walked over to James and James said, did you hear me saying hello, James? I'm shocked every time I pick up a book then like by Ian Banks or something like that. Like I just finished, what's it called? Oh, sorry about this. This is really radio.
While you're trying to figure it out, Ian Banks is my inspiration for this 4 months of writing thing, which I am totally failing at. But apparently he used to like spend 4 months of the year writing and then the rest of the 8 months just like hanging around, traveling, hanging out with his friends.
Kissing.
But four months just writing a book. So I was like, I'm going to do that. November, December, January, February. So far, November almost over, not really doing anything that I can.
Forgive yourself.
Forgive myself. Forgive
You've
myself.
You've done enough. That's shit, right. Man.
I've done enough.
So,
enough.
Ian Banks, The State of the Art and Look to Windward are two books I read this year. And those are like 10 out of 10 in terms of writing. Every single sentence is crafted, like probably rewritten a billion times.
Yeah.
And then I jumped to the fucking Murderbot Diaries, and it's still interesting to me. Yeah. All Systems Red was a book that interested me enough to buy the sequel, but it is literally like, I am a Murderbot. I'm going to walk over here. I also have anxiety. And I'm like, yeah, I get, like, it's very on the nose in terms of what the themes are. The same with The Stone Sky. It's, like, secretly about racism, but it's so on the nose that you're kind of like, okay, a better writer could have done a really good job of this, but it's still good and I'm glad it's successful. And I don't know, I think that's like a funny new little revolution going on at the moment.
It's a cool one.
Yeah, I like
it. Look at me, right? Like I wrote this book, right? And like probably not going to get published, this fantasy book, right? And it could happen with a sci-fi book as well. So where am I? What am I to do with that thing? I have this document, right? What am I to do with that? Well, 20, 30 years ago, like nothing. I just feel like a loser. But I can feel like a loser in a more public way now because there's all these different ways I might self-publish it. I could publish that as like a serial on Medium. I could just like put it in the Kindle store. I could like print it up properly, do it as a Kickstarter. There's like all kinds of things I could try. And that's pretty interesting because some of those, sometimes the publishers are going to miss something that actually is interesting. Even if it's not as well written for some reason, even if for some reason it's not as compelling, they'll miss something and there's still a chance for that to find an audience, which is pretty cool. That actually is cool.
It's like our podcast. If we were back in the radio days, like in the same way that N.K. Jameson has written these books that have gotten super popular, The Stone Sky, and I really love them. I read all three and I like devoured them in one go, but I don't think they were really well written. A lot of people listen to this podcast from start to finish every week, even though, to be fair, Jake, it's not a good podcast compared to Tim Ferriss. Like if you compare it to anyone else's podcast, it's lazy.
Yeah.
It's rambly. We don't stick to the topic, but fuck it, it's fun.
I'm pretty biased about this because it's us talking, right? And I really like the sound of my own voice. You're my friend, so everything about it is good
for me. I like your voice too.
I feel better listening to our podcast than I do listening to other podcasts.
True.
Like I just actually feel better.
It makes you want to smile.
I want to smile. It's just different. When I listen to Tim Ferriss's podcast, I feel bad about myself.
That's because true.
The people who he's interviewing, he's so successful.
Yeah.
And the people he's interviewing are so successful. And they're just talking about how smart they are. And yeah. I'm just like, God, yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't I do... God, oh, they're so smart.
Why don't I get up at 5 a.m. and shave my ass and then slide down the stairs covered in some sort of oil?
Yeah.
That's the new morning routine.
Just to pick up
those
like 5 seconds and to just like put my mind in a different like state on a different plane. That's what I should be doing.
That's what I should be doing.
That's what Jocko and Tim are doing. But like, I'm not. I'm just like rolling out of bed and like stubbing my toe like an idiot.
Yeah. Why am I not injecting psilocybin into my eyes and having a freak out so that I can reach the next plane and so that I really can know myself?
I'm never going to take my game to the next level without microdoses of something.
Yeah.
And I just feel dumb. And then I'm like listening to the podcast and I'm like, oh, if I could just pick up like one tidbit that might make me a little bit better. But then there's a voice in the back of my head that's like, you'd have to pick up a million of those before you're even close to Tim Ferriss or his awesome guest. So I'm saying I feel pretty good about our podcast because we're just a couple of like dudes, just a couple losers, man. Hey, it's totally cool. Oh, happy birthday. Birthday
Happy birthday,
title.
Man.
Happy birthday. Oh, wait, birthday. On the birthday topic. What? And I know we're way over time, but whatever.
There's no overtime.
There's no overtime.
It's our podcast.
It's like your wife's pregnancy. It's in overtime. So is this episode.
Exactly.
What do you think the Product Breakfast Club wants for its birthday?
I think the Product Breakfast Club wants to get to 10,000 listeners by the end of 2000. And by the way, to the topic of, you know, thinking big and that making you feel more excited, I'm so all in for getting 100,000 listeners by the end of 2019.
10X. Yeah. Not 10%, because now we're actually at the point where it's pretty close to 10%. So
10%.
That's the kind of goal that... Astro Teller from Google X will tell you that's a loser's goal. What you want is 10X, Jonathan. 10X.
Who's a loser now? Who's
John,
a loser
how
now?
How are you going to get to 10X? How are you going to get to 100,000? Yeah, how would we get to 100,000 listeners?
I know how we would do it. It would basically, the only way you can do it is that you and I, when you're finished talking about your fucking book, and you go on to every other podcast on the planet, Laura helps us out. Laura puts out the call, and then you and I, over the space of 1 week in January, go on every podcast, talk about design stuff, and then tell them to listen to our podcast. Done.
No, that's too much work. We need
a way.
Yeah,
but that's how you do it.
No, you're not thinking big enough. We need a way where you get 100,000.
10X.
Yeah, 10X, but we don't have to do... That's 10X the work.
Yeah, but we can do ads. Like, you and I recorded... I don't know if you even know this, but you and I... You
I
and I
asleep.
Recorded...
I was just like...
I think you and I recorded a pre-roll that Laura was going to use on other people's podcasts, like an ad for this podcast.
Yeah.
But I actually can't remember. Fuck it. We'll figure it out on the way. What does the Product Breakfast Club want as a gift? It wants to have everybody who listens to the Product Breakfast Club send us a happy birthday message to pbc@ajsmart.com so that me and Jake can look at it and go, yay!
That would be good. That's a good birthday gift.
It means they listen to the whole episode, all three people.
Yeah, that would be good. That would be good. I was thinking like some kind of podcasting equipment, but I guess it's okay already.
Yeah,
like,
it's fine.
It sounds fine. Yeah.
I even went backwards. I have a way better mic than this in the office, but I couldn't be bothered setting it up every time. I like just holding it like this, so fuck it. Jake, the best gift is that people listen to the podcast. They interact with us online. We have an audience that's bigger than a normal conference every week, you know, doing their thing, getting happy, and we shouldn't take it for granted. Sometimes I'm like, yeah, this sucks. Only 4,000 people listen to the episode. Only say, and I'm like, you know what? You know what? Even if two people, no, if two people is too few.
That's
two
too
people
few.
Is too few, I'm out. If it ever turns out to be just two people, I'm definitely quitting. You've already given us the gift of listening.
The gift of life for podcast is listeners, and you've given us that.
Jake, where can people find you online? I'm killing this episode.
Yeah.
I need to pee a lot as well. If I don't go to the bathroom right now, it's going to be like what I talked about in Red Dead Redemption last week.
Stuck in a bucket. Oh,
yeah,
people
stuck
fun.
In a
so
bucket.
You can find me online at jakenap.com. John, where can they find you?
Jake is so professional, he even has a website for himself. You can find me on Instagram and only Instagram. Seriously, don't send me messages on Twitter because I don't use it and I don't want to feel bad about not replying to you.
That's part of my thing with JakePod, actually, is I was thinking, wouldn't it be cool to, instead of using social media, to instead of using Twitter to post stuff, what if you just only had a podcast?
Yeah, JakePod.
JakePod.
I love the idea. You can find me on Instagram at JIceCream. JIceCream. Okay.
That's how it's pronounced. J ice cream.
Yeah, J ice cream. Not any other way. There's no way you should pronounce it in a different way. Jake, happy birthday, man. Let's sing it out as happy birthday as well.
Why not?
Happy birthday.
Happy
club.
Birthday to, like, yeah, that? To the rhythm of Product Breakfast Club. Okay, so and on.
Okay.
Three, two, one. Happy birthday club.
Birthday
happy
club.
Happy birthday club.
Happy birthday club.
As if there's a rhythm to it.
Happy birthday club. Happy birthday club.
It's your birthday.
Happy birthday club.
Happy birthday club. It's your birthday, Broad. Happy breakfast birthday.
Club. Club's birthday today. Bye-bye, everybody.